Before getting into the sermon this morning, I want to update you on the vision process. First of all, for those who participated in those meetings over the last few weeks, thank you so much for your participation in that. I know I found that to be encouraging and a meaningful exercise. I hope you felt the same. At least we got a pretty good meal out of it, either a lunch or a breakfast, so that's worth something. Right? Next Saturday, April 30th, the vision team, that group of 15 folks, we're going to be getting together and we're going to be processing this group of 15. We're going to be processing what we heard and what we wrote down during those two meetings. Through this whole process, need to clearly state this, through this whole process, we have been praying for God's leadership in this. And I've heard this prayer several times from different members of the congregation, and I so appreciate it. God, help us, help our vision to be your vision. And that's really what this is about. And so thank you so much for your participation in it up to this point. Please be praying for this process, please. Also, again, feel free to talk with those that are a part of the vision team. Ask the elders about it. We want to be very open and transparent about this process. We are in this together. This is the Leander Church of Christ vision. So this is something that we are doing as a community. But please be praying about it. During the meeting next Saturday, we'll talk more about the timeline. That's probably something you're wondering about. Okay, we're having these meetings. When are we going to see some fruit of this? I think we already are seeing some fruit of this, but we'll talk about that timeline next Saturday, and then we will keep you up to speed on where we're going from here. So we want to be open and transparent about this whole process. Please be praying about it. We're starting a new series today. We're done with the prodigal son parable, so you may either be thankful for that or thinking, oh, I'm disappointed because you wanted that for one more week. But whatever the case, we're done with that. We're moving on to a series that we are just calling Identity. It's a question that all of us are asking really on a regular basis. Who am I? Or who are we? As a matter of fact, in this vision process, that's a question that we have been asking. Who are we? Who should we be? And then on an individual level, who am I? Who should I be? Several years ago, I had a friend who is a Michigan Wolverines fan. I still consider him a friend, even though he's a Michigan fan. So I'm an Ohio State fan, as I've talked about before. And Ohio State and Michigan is kind of like Texas and Texas A&M, or Texas and Oklahoma, or from way back, Texas and Arkansas. Just fans just don't get along for the most part, at least when it comes to talking and thinking sports. But I had a friend, he's a Michigan fan, that invited me to a Michigan game. And I thought, you know, that would be fun. Go to the Big House, you know, one of the largest stadiums in all the country. It'd be a neat experience. I didn't wear my scarlet and gray or anything like that, but I went along for this game. Throughout the entire game, I was like torn. I was asking the question over and over again, who am I? Because what was happening is that as the fans were getting excited, as the band was coming on the field, as Michigan scored, I think maybe one, perhaps two touchdowns, through this, I found myself like, it was pretty much that. What am I doing? So I found myself like starting to almost clap. Like I was being influenced by these Michigan fans. And then I'd had this moment of thinking, what am I doing? I need to get out of here. I was just, this inner turmoil was working on me as I was watching this game. And I noticed my friend kept looking over like, what's he going to do? You know, should I stand when the team gets a first down or a touchdown? So I just had this inner turmoil. Have you ever found yourself just completely out of place? There have been some moments where you were looking around and you thought to yourself, how in the world did I get here? What am I doing in this place right now? What is going on here? Have you ever found yourself in moments like that? We're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to start in verse 9. In fact, we're going to read 1 Peter chapter 2, 9 through 12 this morning. We're going to look at this text in depth. But in all of this, we're thinking about the question, who am I or who are we? So Peter writes this, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." 1 Peter, really the whole book, is like an identity check for the Christians. As a matter of fact, in the greeting, if you want to turn over a page, in the greeting, Peter refers to these Christians as God's elect strangers in the world. There's another text in 1 Peter where Peter refers to the Christians as strangers, and we'll look at that here in just a moment. But throughout 1 Peter, Peter is going to remind these Christians that they are, first of all, Christ followers. And that's going to make all the difference in their lives. It's well documented that they were facing persecution, likely from Nero in Rome. Things were tough for them, to say the least. Either facing persecution or the threat of persecution, it was affecting them in the marketplace. It was affecting them in their vocations. It was affecting them in a family context. Things were difficult for them, to say the least. Peter, over and over again, with that in mind, reminds them of who they are, that they are ultimately followers of Christ, that they have an inheritance waiting for them, that they have a family of believers where they can find love and strength and encouragement. They have hope in Jesus Christ. And so with things really difficult for them, Peter is going to remind them of who they are. And that's what we see here in verse 9. They are a chosen people. They are a royal priesthood. In other words, these Christians are God's representatives in the world. Even in the midst of challenges, they are representing to the people, even those that were persecuting them, they were representing God. They were a holy nation. They were set apart for God's purposes, to do his will. And they were a people belonging to God. In the midst of the challenges, they may not felt like they belonged to anyone. But Peter reminds them that they ultimately belong to the Creator, to God. He says, once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God, and that's going to make all the difference for them. So Peter, he does, like in that movie or in the book, I watched the movie, didn't read the book, The Help. Remember that, where I think it's Abilene says to this little girl, "You is smart, you is kind, excuse me, you is kind, and you is important." Now, the English on that, we talk about that another time. But what is taking place in that moment is she is reminding this little girl of who she is, her value and worth, that she is kind, that she is smart, that she is important. Peter is sort of doing the same thing for these Christians. You're a people that belong to God. You've received mercy from God. You are a holy nation. You are a priesthood for God and for the world. You have to wonder, as Peter was sharing this with these Christians, you have to wonder if he was having like a flashback to that night with Jesus Christ. We read about it in John 15, 18 through 21. These are words that Jesus spoke to the disciples, to the apostles, and Peter was part of that. So here's what Jesus says to the disciples. "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first." Now, I've told you this before. I have a propensity to be a people pleaser. I don't like this verse, right? If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. This is language about identity again. Verse 19, if you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember the words I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you in this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. What we see in 1 Peter chapter 2 and in John 15, it sounds pretty similar, doesn't it? Jesus has said, the world may hate you. Don't be surprised when the world hates you. I want us to focus on what Peter says about being aliens and strangers, being foreigners, being exiles in this world. The world was hostile for Peter's recipients. I've already made that clear. Challenging place to live out the faith. But I want to make the claim that the world that we live in today is a hostile place as well. It may be hostile in a different way. We may not be facing swords at this point. I don't know if any of us are going to be crucified upside down or anything like that. But I want to say that the world continues to be hostile to the way and purposes of God. Peter said in chapter 4, in verse 3 in 1 Peter, he said, for you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do. So this is what he says about the pagan lifestyle here. Those who do not live in according to God's way. This is what he says. Living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. It wasn't just persecution, but it was what was going on in the world were those type of things. Does that sound familiar to what we see today? The world continues to be a hostile place. These stats are old. I admit that, which when I share them, it should make things all the more staggering for us. Every second, $3,000 is spent on pornography. Every second. Like I said, these stats are old. It's probably $10,000 every second is spent in the pornography industry. Every second, 28,258 internet users are viewing pornography. Every second. Every second, 372 internet users are typing some sort of adult search item into a search engine like Google or Yahoo. Every 39 minutes, a new pornographic video is being created. Less than an hour. Every 39 minutes. And what we know is that even what we view on what we consider just regular television, just a few years ago, we all know this, I'm not saying anything we haven't heard before, would it be considered pornographic? Just a few years ago, would it be considered pornographic? That's just a little bit of what is going on as far as this sexuality in the United States today. We think about time. I've heard it's something like the average American spends like 28 hours a week watching television. 28 hours a week. And we think of the busyness of our culture. Just a few years ago, it was said of our culture that with the technology that that we have now, people would only have to work like a few hours a week, which create more opportunity for entertainment, enjoyment, family time, things like that. But we know that's not the case. As a matter of fact, our world tends to be, especially in this United States culture, tends to be spinning out of control as we have busier and busier and busier, as we create more, make more, create more, make more. We think about money. Keeping up with the Joneses, that's what we talked about the other on a Sunday night a couple weeks ago. Keeping up with the Joneses, no matter how much debt we have to go into to do that. We think of relationships that are broken because of this chase of the dollar. This is going on in our world today. And these are just a few categories of life in our society today. And Christians, we aren't immune to living this way. We understand that. Remember what Peter said to the Christians in chapter 5 and verse 8, your enemy, he prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And we already know this. Satan doesn't think, well, that person's a Christian, so I'm not going to work on that person. I think that's actually very inconsistent with how Peter, or with how Satan works. In 1 Peter 2, verse 11, I urge you, as aliens and strangers in the world, to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Here's the thing. So we're called to live as aliens and strangers in this world. And what Peter says about sin, these sinful desires, the flesh, we might say, is he says, wages war against your soul. A lot of times we don't think about sin and sinful desires that way. As a matter of fact, we kind of keep them around like a pet, often thinking, well, we can just, we can sort of dabble in it. And Peter says, no, these sinful desires, they wage war against your soul. We think about politics, too. I think it's important to say this because of the time of the year it is, and because it's an election year. I think with politics, and this isn't the time to go into this any deep way. I'm not meaning to do that. I think as Christians, as aliens and strangers here, we understand that our home is ultimately in God's space. It's in heaven. Our King is ultimately Jesus. And I think as we talk about politics, whether it's online or whether in face-to-face interaction, I would hope that it would always be clear that first and foremost, our home is heaven, and that our King is Jesus. See, the way that we talk about all of this is very important. It's demonstrating where our true allegiance lies. And so in all of this, we need to remember our identity, that we are alien strangers in the world. It influences every aspect of life, all that we say. So Peter said back in chapter 1, verses 17 through 21, he says, since you call on a father who judges each man's work impartially, live your lives as strangers here in reverent fear. I think that's primarily talking about reverent fear to God, but I also think there's some reverent fear to the traps that are in the world. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through him, you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, and so your faith and hope are in God. So once again, Peter says, live as strangers here. And the basis is that, the basis for this is you were redeemed through Christ. And so we respond to God's gift of Jesus Christ by living as God wants us to be. And that means living as strangers in this world. You think of our baptism. In baptism, we became new people. Paul says we became a new creation. We have new life, and it comes out of the grace of God. Our standard of life is different from that point. From that point forward. Back to verses 11 and 12. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. In 1 Peter, it directly states how we are to live as aliens and strangers in the world. The world, and generally speaking, says hate and hurt. But as aliens, we live in harmony with one another. The world says do whatever it takes to reach the top. as aliens and strangers, we get rid of all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy. The world says to say whatever you want to whoever you want. As Christ followers, we are to speak as those speaking the very words of God. The world says seek revenge and fight. Aliens and strangers are to repay, and this is so hard, are to repay evil and insults with blessing. And the world says to simply learn to live with anxiety. Just cope with it. But Christians, and it's what Peter says, we're to cast all our anxieties on the God because he cares for us. So as aliens and strangers in the world, we ask questions like, is my relationship with God, is it shaping the way that I am involved in other relationships? Is it shaping the way that I use my money? Does my use of time contradict my conviction that Jesus is Lord? Or in the way that I talk to my spouse, my kids, my friends, my coworkers, the way that I talk, am I honoring God? And thinking about sin, do I really believe that sinful desires are battling against my soul? Do I really think that? Part of being aliens and strangers is that we name and claim things correctly. We call sin, sin. And Peter says this, and I think this is so important. He says in verse 12, "Let's live such good lives among the pagans, called to live in a certain way, that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds." And here's the hope, the vision. "And they may glorify God on the day he visits us." And so we use this language a lot. And it's fine language. But we say, yeah, we have some missionaries, or we support missionaries. We know the truth is we are all missionaries. We are all called to the task of sharing the good news of Jesus. And what Peter does here in 1 Peter chapter 2 is he says, here's how you do it. Here's the blueprint, the game plan. Live such good lives. Live as aliens and strangers. And when you do that, they may accuse you of doing wrong. But the hope is that they will glorify God on the day he visits us. And so the flip side of this, and I think this is what's so crucial for our lesson for this morning. The flip side of this is when we become like chameleons to the world, we end up diminishing our witness to the world. Peter says, you are to live as aliens and strangers so that you can change the world for Jesus Christ. And we've been talking about loving God and loving our neighbors. Loving God and loving our neighbors. It's not all about, and we made this clear in the sermon series, but to say it again, it's not all about just, you know, go home today, knock on their door and say, if you die tonight, where are you going to spend eternity? You can do that. If you want to go that route, just let us know how that works for you. But more of what we're talking about here is that every day, every interaction, all of our conversations, we're living as alien strangers. Jesus is the Lord of our lives, and so it's shaping the way that I interact with others. It's said of Abraham in Hebrews chapter 11. I love this. I want to close with this morning. 11, starting at verse 9, it says this. This is about Abraham. "By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God." We're kind of living, following in Abraham's footsteps. And skipping down to verse 13. "All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. and they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. So we ask the question, how do we live this alien and stranger life? It starts with, like our forefathers in the faith, it starts with admitting that we're aliens and strangers. And so, what I want us to do, it's a little congregational exercise. It starts with admitting. So turn to someone close to you and say, I'm an alien and stranger here. And you have to say this back and forth, okay? Don't say you look like an alien. All right. Then we have this. Verse 15, the next verse. If they had been thinking, these are the faith hall of fame, so to speak. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So the next thing is that we long for a better country. So turn to the next person next to you and say, I'm longing for a better country. Yes. Okay, and here's the deal. Here's why it's so important that we are longing for this better country. What we hope for shapes the way that we live today. What we hope for shapes the way that we live today. You think of heaven, God's space, place of purity, of peace, of wholeness, a place of perfection, right? When you think of heaven, that's what we think of. That, what we hope for, shapes the way that we are living today. And then it says this, verse 37. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins. Thankfully, we don't have to do that. Destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. Now, this is it right here. If you're into starring, highlighting, underlining, the world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. So the Hebrews writer just like tucks that in there. The world was not worthy of them. And here's the deal for us, the truth, the reality. The world is not worthy of us bowing down to its standards, its way, its style of doing life. Talking like it talks, behaving like it behaves. Only God is worthy of our lives. The world was not worthy of them. And so here's what to do going forward. We understand that the world is not worthy of us, but what we do, the world as it is. And so we allow the truth that we are aliens and strangers, this identity question, we allow it to shape the way that we live as we influence it with the good news of Jesus Christ, the gospel. God, heaven, his ways, his mission, his purposes are so much grander. And we're invited as aliens and strangers to participate in life with him. If there's anybody here today that needs the prayers of the church family, here in a moment, Daryl is going to lead us in an invitation song. If you have anything you'd like to bring to us today that we can pray for you about, you can come forward and let us know what's on your heart, and we'd be glad to pray with you or for you. If there is anybody here today that is ready to give your life over to the Savior, to Jesus Christ in baptism, we would just be incredibly blessed and privileged to witness you make that decision today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our God who is worthy of our praise.